Hello and welcome to recording number 4 of Gary Gygax's Sea of Death, an annotated reading. Today is September 3rd, 2021. So we've just had Gord, who is now in Ket, and he has interfered in a fight between a Ketashik and a warrior. I forgot where the warrior was from offhand. And first, he was attacked by the Sheik's assassin, who he dispatched, and now 5 or 6 of the Sheik's personal guard, I think it's 5 now, as the biggest one was just killed by Gord, are circling in to attack him. Ket is a very international kind of state, has a lot of Paranlanders, Bissellites, even some Velonese who are working there as mercenaries or coming through as guardsmen or merchants. And so Gord is being both cheered and booed by whether you are from the eastern Flaness or the western back Lunish states. All right, now I'm going to restart. Gord is in the middle of the fight, and it is page 43 and paragraph 2 from the end. All right. "You fight well for a greasy pile of pig shit," Gord said, getting off the remark while he was in constant motion, parrying and sidestepping the first few blows. The 4 other swordsmen had almost finished fanning out to cover Gord's strikes, Gord's sides and back, when the foe in front of him took time for a long backswing. Gord leapt toward the man suddenly, thrusting his sword out and upward. Caught off guard, the fat Jakifi swordsman tried to back away. He barely avoided the thrust, but was far too slow to prevent the follow-up strokes. Gord wounded him first with a dagger strike to the torso, then a painful backhand sword cut across the unarmored upper right leg. The big guardsman fell over backward, clutching at his leg, and lost consciousness when he hit the floor. Gord somersaulted over the man even as he fell, and landed facing the 4 remaining attackers, who found themselves about to swing at empty space. "Sheath your swords now," Gord said flatly to them, "and I will forget this incident. If you continue to attack me, I will give you no quarter." "Kill," urged the Shah Kuftir. Somewhat uncertain now, the 4 warriors came against their opponent once again, obligated to obey their master's command, but loath to face this small and terrible foeman. "To your deaths, then," Gord said, without threat or emotion. The guardsmen of the Shah of Wadlu did not take the Easterner's words lightly, but they really had no choice. Not to attack him meant death to them as surely as if they did come on, and the small man's warning came true. Kuftir would boil them alive for failure, while at the worst this Orami offered them a clean and quick end. The 4 warriors launched themselves nearly simultaneously at the lone foreigner, not bothering to organize a plan of attack. Furious blows, lunging thrusts, and a flurry of slashes poured upon the black-garbed man from front and sides. It was frustrating to these attackers, for the small foreigner never seemed to be where he had been, but a split second before when a tulwar was sent swishing toward him. In the course of this confused series of exchanges, the 4 men seemed to get in each other's way, while the stranger's own weapon inflicted many wounds of small sword upon the sweating guardsman. The crowd was silent, awed by the feats of this single man. First he had dispatched a deadly assassin, then a giant swordsman, both without emotion or seeming strain. A third man was helpless on the floor, as good as dead if not already gone. Now he contested to the death with four expert warriors all at once. He stood still, unwounded, holding four large tulwars in play, while those who dared wield them against this black-clad man were dripping blood from wounds he had given them. Events were becoming too much for the Westerners in the audience to bear. The insult inherent in all this was unacceptable. Onlookers from Jakif, Kuzmit, and Ekber grew angry and loosened their own scimitars and curved-bladed daggers. The various nomad tribesmen in the crowd watched the show without apparent allegiance, commenting to one another on style and form as they viewed the display before them. Most of the Kedites, along with all of the eastern mercenaries, however, were rooting openly for the small man called Gord of Greyhawk. They cheered his successes and laughed at the clumsy attempts of the Jakifi to strike him. It was becoming obvious to all that the melee could end only one way, and that ending must come soon. All of the Jakifi guardsmen were wounded and panting with fatigue from raising and swinging their large blades repeatedly. In no more than a minute or two, one of them would fall, then another. Soon, all of those who had come against the small man would litter the floor, as three already did. When yet one more corpse crashed to the tiled floor, the Shah had seen enough, and Kuftir himself entered the fray. Although the noble's dagger had a jewel-encrusted hilt, its silvery crescent below these gems was sharp steel, highly functional, and glittering with a dark enchantment. Kuftir came in a silent rush from a point slightly behind Gord, heading toward the young man's left side. With his curved dagger held across his body, set to deliver a disemboweling stroke, as the black-garbed Easterner concentrated on the three guardsmen still standing before him. Gord gave no indication that he knew Kuftir was coming, but at the last instant he sprang aside suddenly, allowing the startled Shah of Wad Lu to pass on a slant in front of him. The wickedly gleaming blade of Kuftir's dagger cut empty air, then with a cross-body thrust of his dagger into Kuftir's side and a shove of his left foot against the nobleman's hip, Gord pushed the Shah off course right toward the exposed blades of his own guards. The nearest of the swordsmen tried to pull his weapon up and away, but succeeded only in running the edge along Kuftir's neck as he did so. The mouth tried to scream, but no sound came out as the nobleman crumpled in his tracks. The guardsman whose weapon struck the blow stood frozen for an instant, horrified at what he had just done. Gord's weapons flashed again, and the Jakifi warrior no longer had to concern himself with having slain his master, for he too was a corpse. As the guardsman's body collapsed on top of the Kuftir, the two survivors dropped their tulwars and ran. They would rather risk being captured sometime later, given 1,000 cuts and then rolled in salt until dead, than continue to face this terrible black-garbed man any longer. All right. Silence reigned in the wine house for the space of a heartbeat. The flesh of the blubbery proprietor shook as he peered angrily about his establishment and realized his plight. It was bad enough that this upstart had won. Now the bargain could not be sealed, and Omar would lose the 1,000 gold dakshis and the fabulous pearl. Worse yet, the death of so great a personage as the Shah of Wad Lu in his establishment would probably bring the wrath of the Shah's own ruler, the Marcher Lord of Ket, down upon his body. Trembling and growing more furious by the second, Omar realized that the young foreigner must be killed at any cost. He vented his wrath in a shrill scream, pointed at Gord, and shrieked an order to attack. Several of Omar's armed servants reluctantly approached the circle where Gord still stood amidst the fallen forms of his adversaries. At the same time, an uproar of sound and activity spread through the audience. These men had had enough of watching. Hodo Ekbar, Valuna and Struthbert, Tuzmani Akbar. All right, breaks. So, one of the interesting, we just got things that we just got right off here. We do get a Bond-esque or like a Jason Bourne start to this with Gord has now slain, the assassin, the lead, three guards, three other guardsmen, and drove the Shah into the blades of his own men. So, again, I thought that was exciting, and it does show you what a very high-level, character can do to lower-level characters. And while they may all be experienced, they may even be, like, high-level, 8th or 9th level itself. I would not think the Master was. I think the Shah had an enchanted weapon, but really wasn't that, really wasn't that skilled a fighter. Because Gord was very easily, got out of the way, wounds him, and drives him onto the blades of his own man. I like these, battle cries. Hodo Ekbar, Valuna and Struthbert, Tuzmani Akbori. So, we can cut them out and add them to a little campaign lore. I always like these oaths and battle cries. So I definitely cut them out for the game. We have also a good, I'd say it's mentioned. Gord at this point seems to be up to level 10 or 12 with perks, if not higher. Oh, yeah. I mean, really, his backstab seems so powerful at this point. His armor class is so high that, I don't think he's really losing any of the hit points or anything. I think he's easily twice as powerful as twice the level of most of these NPCs he's running against, the skilled guardsmen and such. Like, even if they're 6th or 7th level, I think Gord is, twice as experienced in levels, and the perks he's getting at this level, I think he's probably maxed out first level, first edition AD&D levels possible here. And then you have to go on higher to see what he gains. I think he is one of the highest level thieves we're going to run up against. All right, so we get a good example here of an encounter in Kett, and probably also it's showing the animosity between the nomads and the more settled Backlooney. It shows the weakness after the, invoked devastation, where the Backlooney are no longer a united force, and even against Easterners. It shows here that there is some division where these Western nomads, they are ready to cheer for Gord because they admire his skill rather than hate him because he's from the Flaness. So, that is good background lore here. You don't have to use it, but I think that Gygax is doing a good job illustrating how the people in Kett and the Backlooney nomads might act, and you might be able to deal better with them than the more organized states such as Ekmar and Tuzbut and even Kett. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 47, and it is the fourth chapter down from the top. In seconds, a cacophony of battle cries and challenges erupted, and the place truly became a battleground of East versus West. Kettites fought on both sides. each according to his feelings at the moment, brawling and using blades. The Eastern mercenaries and outlaws generally contended with the dark-skinned and turbaned Westerners, while Gord stood alone, an island in the turmoil, because no one dared deal with him. Off to his right, he saw the Pearl of Perfection making her way toward him across an uncongested area. The young man she had been with was nowhere in sight. One of the fat owner's servants lunged at the girl as she got near Gord, but with a lunge of his own and a flash of steel, the young man handled the threat easily. Then the crowd lost all semblance of cohesion, and the surge of the melee engulfed the open space that had surrounded Gord just a moment before. The girl moved closer to Gord and grabbed his arm. "Quickly, follow me," the gorgeous girl shouted in his ear. Then her shapely arm released his, and she began running and dodging through the crowd of fighting men, heading for a curtained archway at the rear of the large court. Gord ran after the nearly naked girl. The brawling seemed to ebb in an area she passed through, seemingly. No one wanted to be responsible for injuring this beautiful and coveted prize. Nobody directly attacked Gord either, for they had all seen what he could do. But the young Easterner had to be constantly on the alert to avoid being stabbed or slashed by an inadvertent stroke as he darted along the same course the dancer had taken. Charging behind the girl through the still-swinging cloth that screened the portal, Gord found himself in a broad but ill-lighted hallway. He caught a glimpse of the pearl's pale hair disappearing around a corner ahead. The smell of stale, spicy food was strong in here. He guessed that the girl was heading for the kitchen and some back exit, so the young swordsman dashed down the short passage and around the corner into a larger room. "Hurry," she urged as Gord came to the deserted place. This was the cooking room, all right, but the cooks and scullions must have either joined the melee or fled earlier. "We must get away quickly," the pearl said as she led Gord across the room, out another doorway, and through a small walled garden. A tall man, his body covered by a voluminous burnous, and his face veiled in the fashion of many Tuzmit tribesmen, stood holding open a heavy back gate. At his feet was a guard. In the hand not holding his dagger was the dead man's robe. "Who is?" the man started to ask, but the girl can't cut him off. "Can't you see?" the pearl scolded as she and Gord came up to the portal. "It is the Orimi who stood between you and death." The veiled warrior made no reply. With a swirl, he draped the unclad dancer with the burnous he held, guiding her through the gate as he did so. Gord leaped through the portal on her heels, and then the tall back loony pushed the heavy door shut and jammed an iron bar into place. The man and woman had to stop for a moment to get their bearings, because the alley in which they stood was almost pitch black. But Gord had a special night sight that served him automatically, and he could see as clearly as if the sun illuminated the sky, not merely a sprinkling of stars in the tiny pale blue half-sphere of Selene, the lesser of Earth's twin moons. "Thanks, Pearl of Perfection, for showing me the way out of that place," he said sincerely. "My sword arm was growing weary." "Why did you fight on my behalf?" the tall man asked, pulling back the hood of his burnous. Gord suddenly recognized him as the tribesman who had been the object of the pearl's affections inside. There was no doubt that Gord had saved his life, but the young Easterner also understood that the man's pride had been injured. He answered without irritation, "To be honest, this whole night was like a bad dream. I once knew a beautiful dancer of Kep myself, and she too was to be sold. No matter, I did as I chose. and I trust you are satisfied with my work, Gord said. All right, break. So Chris has put up what they're basically talking about here. It's a cloak showing on this French Spahi uniform, and it's this white cloak that hangs off the shoulders, and it can be swept for complete covering. Comes down to about the knees. So it's very good covering right here.
Would probably be good for desert riding.
Yes, especially for the riding. It's a good thing with the cloaks. And, the cloaks were normally, northerly cloaks would be, would be thicker for cold, and also treated with something to repel water. Sometimes what they would do is it was a skinned, skin cloak, and they would reverse it so that the outer fur lining would be inside and the inner skin would be turned outward. And it worked very well repelling moisture. Or the other thing they would do is take a thick wool cloak and treat the outside with wax till it was, sunk into the material. And that was another good one. Now, the white cloak is especially good in the desert because what it does is it's the best to wear in the high heat. Pure white can be a bit of a camouflage as well in the desert sun. Now, it's been asked if this Kedish girl the Gord once mentioned is in the books. I don't think so. I think this is a quick bit of lie on Gord's part to mitigate the sense of lost pride by the warrior. I don't think Gord has actually been to Ket before. And, it's possible. We don't know when this story is taking place. We know it comes after his encounter in the Vesve and then to the Cat Lord's realm. And he may have been sent to Ket, but I really don't think that he knew a dancer, in a Kettish dancing girl. All right. So I'm going to restart. It is page 49 and the fourth paragraph down. The girl squeezed Gord's leather-clad arm. Thank you, stranger, for you have helped give me life and hope. I can never tell you how much what you did means to me. Yes, many thanks, warrior of the east, the tall Kirker said with a ring of grudging admiration in his tone. Then, more enthusiastically, he continued, come with me. I carry the pearl home to the Penners, where the Al-Babar tribe of the Kirker, a people roam free. There will be welcome there for a man such as you. Oh, yes, Zulman, do have this, Gord of Greyhawk. Come, too. The dancer agreed. Then she added urgently, but we must hurry, for all Lupalu will soon be in hue and cry over what has happened. We must get out, and then we can talk on the way. Gord didn't mind leaving the issue unresolved for the time being. The three, went quickly down the alley and into a narrower side passage that turned several times before giving into a small, open square. Four horses were tied here, two of them saddled. Zulman went to one of the horses' packs and produced a robe similar to his own, a drab instead of colorful. He tossed it to Gord, and the young man quickly put it on over his leather garb. Can you ride bareback? Solman asked as he helped the girl into one of the saddles. Yes, Gord replied. Then the two there are spare steeds, the warrior called back softly as he mounted. Take whichever pleases you, and bring the other behind. The three left the little bazaar by the narrow road opposite the passage they had entered it from. To Gord's sensitive ears, the iron-shod hooves of their horses made enough noise sufficient to awaken all of Blupaloo. As they rapidly walked the mounts along the building fronts that walled the lane, he peered nervously about, but nobody was watching. No windows above were open. Thinking that he much preferred his own silent mode of movement through sleeping cities, Gord hunched low atop his mount and followed the fleeing pair ahead. It was better he decided to stay with the warrior and the woman for now. They did seem to have a plan for getting out of the city, and Gord certainly had to do that. Everything he wasn't carrying would have to be left behind, but that was no matter. Only some clothing and small coins remained in the caravansary, where Gord had been lodged. Get off your horse and lead both of them, Zolmar called back softly. We come to the gate, and you must be my slave for the moment. Gord complied without comment, trotting briskly to keep up. The young man followed the riders on foot for the next 100 yards or so up to the gate. There were four guards flanking the closed doors, well armed with recurved bows and long spears in addition to their swords. These men refused to open the portal and called their corporal out from inside the gatehouse. This man started to complain and threaten, but when Zulamon put some copper and bronze coins in a small purse and tossed the bag to him, the corporal quieted down and made only a cursory inspection of horses and riders, not even bothering to look at Gord. Then the gates opened, and they were free of the city. In seconds, the night had swallowed them. All right, break. This is the end of chapter 2. And now, they're showing a picture here of Violet. And Violet had been from Saga of the Old City. She was really Gord's first love. And she had been a very young member of the Beggars Guild. She was about 16 and a prostitute, and also, one of the thieves. And she was murdered by the head of the Thieves Guild killed by the head of the Beggars Guild, Theobald, for murdering one of the thieves, member of the Thieves Guild, and before he wanted it to be known that they were going to be going to war. And Gord had always finally got vengeance on that. Now, that is a Clive Caldwell drawing. Yeah, you know, he really was, he was a very good artist. And we next saw in Artifact of Evil, Caldwell did the cover, but the interior art was Easley did some very quick, good sketch work, but it was not as detailed as these black and white Clive Caldwells. So since then, Gord has been rather unlucky in love, although most recently Hayes had this recurring tryst with the Tigerware Terrip when he is in the... I'm sorry, it's Jerry Tirotilli, not Easley.
Well, Easley definitely did Artifact of Evil. This is for Sea of Dead. I wasn't correcting you. I thought while we were talking about artists, I would put up each of them for all the books that we've done so far.
Well, there is an example of the artwork of Tirotilli on the inside of the first page, right across from the title. And yes, he definitely was not an easily our Caldwell. The book cover I wonder if that's Tarantelli as well who did the book cover.
It doesn't distinguish between inside and outside, but that's the picture I think you were talking about.
Yes, and it's definitely much better work than, say, not some of his more rough work that I see here. But at this time, Gygax had been thrown out of TSR, and this was with his new company, New Infinities. And, he did not have access to the great artists that TSR had started out. All right. All right, I'm going to restart. That is supposed to be the capital of Ket. Now, in this story, it's Lopulu, but it's really what Lapala in the Greyhawk, in Greyhawk. So we get a little idea. We see the idea of the caravansary, the merchants, the kind of people are there in that wine house. Little physical description of the wine house, and then the idea of what their gates are like. I don't know how many gates they're talking about, and we don't have a real idea of the structure. It's just some odd bits and pieces that were given in Chapter 2 about the structure, little bits about the structure of Lupulu or Lapala. All right. So I'm going to restart. It is Chapter 3, page number 52, and the first paragraph. By morning, the group was miles away from the city, but they had been moving in a direction that made no sense to Gord. When he questioned the other man, Zulon explained his deception. We ride southeast into the middle regions of Ket. But the garments we wore at the city gate last night were of Tazmiti sort. I think that pursuit will sweep the northwest and west, expecting us to head for Tazmit, the big nomad said. Then he gave out a barking laugh and added, who in their right mind would seek safety from the agents of the Marcher Lord by riding deeper into his very realm? That is a novel approach to escape, Gord commented dryly. It also places me in a most undesirable situation, for I desire to travel southwest. Why that way, Gord of Greyhawk? The Pearl asked in her sweet voice. Why not just come with us and dwell with Zulmon's tribe? Before the young thief could answer, Zulmon spoke to the point. We will turn due southward soon enough, Gord. The Tuzmuk River flows to our left hand. And as it bends southward, so too will our path. The tall hillman looked inquiringly at Gord, and the black-garbed thief nodded for the Kirker to speak on. The land between the great forest you Easterners call Briar Tangle and the river is a wild and lawless region. Bandits might try to molest us, but none of Ket's soldiery will be in our way. We will ford the Tuzmuk and be in the hills by tomorrow evening. All right, break. So the bramble is obviously the Briar Tangle. This river is named, but I don't remember it offhand. Remember, they're fleeing from Lapala. So very quickly, I'd guess they ford. There must be a ford south, just south of Lapala, southeast, and then. The Tuflik River. All right.
Yeah, I think that's it, because that goes all the way down and bends by Lapala.
Sure, the Tuzmuk River, the Tuflik River. Gygax tried to keep the names sounding like each other. All right. So we're given the thing then that south of Lapala, across the river, is a wild land with a lot of bandits. That's interesting. So, heavily controlled by Ket, and just at this point right here. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 53, paragraph 1. True to Zulman's prediction, the three riders came to the first slopes of the Penner Hills. Before the sun set the next day, the locals avoided them, and a handful of motley dressed outlaws posed the only threat they encountered. The Kirker's huge bow, so large the nomad had to dismount to nock an arrow and draw it, easily discouraged the ragged men from coming close enough to ply their weapons against the three. The Pearl was silent for several hours as they rode, her expression impassive. Finally, when the sun had all but disappeared below the horizon, and Zulman decided they would stop for the night, the girl dismounted with a huff, as if getting off the horse was a signal for her to begin talking again. She told her troubles to no one in particular. "I hate horseback riding," she shouted. "I hate it." This was the first time Gord had ever heard her voice sound so harsh, and the dancing girl looked bedraggled and cross, too. "I will never be able to dance again if I must sit on a horse for so long, and I want a soft bed and a place to bathe." "I'm sorry, my golden dove," Zulman told her softly, "but we can rest only a few hours here. In but one more day of riding, we will be in the lands of my people. Then all will be made right." The Pearl grumbled and still looked miserable and unhappy, but she sighed with resignation and tried to get comfortable on the hard ground. "Ow, rocks stab me all over," she cried, "and the smell of the horse sweat makes me sick." Zulman offered to take the first watch, so Gord found his own piece of flat ground, lay down on his side, and tried to get to sleep. Meanwhile, Zulman helped his intended bride get more comfortable, assured her over and over that soon all would be fine, and urged her to rest while he stood guard over her. Things were not going to be all mare's milk and honey for this couple, Gord reflected. He knew a little of nomadic life, and these hills would not provide the every comfort the Pearl seemed to desire. Nonetheless, he thought to himself, eventually she would get used to it. A better man than Zulman would be unlikely for her. The adjustment, however, would be difficult for both, he mused. Then Gord fell asleep. When Zulman woke him later for his turn at watch, the Pearl was sleeping fitfully, but at least she was sleeping, and she dozed that way until dawn. All right, so I'm breaking right here. Banner Hills, La Pala, Banner Hills. Okay, so it's Banner Hills on Anna's map. And that looks fine. We see the river. She actually puts La Pala right on the river, which, you know, Darlene's map is pretty bad about where certain things are located. Like John's Port up in the Bone March looks like it is miles away from the coastline, and yet it's supposed to be a port city. So pretty much that we can just blame on the... on the way the places were placed on the map, not necessarily by Darlene's design. Now, La Pala is, I believe, I think the red line is supposed to denote the border, and La Pala, I don't know. Yes. Now, it's commented that this is an interesting commentary from Gord regarding the couple, because he is the voice of experience, because in the first book, Saga of Old City, Gord, unfortunately, did not understand the culture and ended up with this Rene woman named Estrella, who was, then his, and, you know, like de facto wife. And he had to work away for him to get rid of her, because he couldn't stand her. And so this is actually very, very, in a sense, very similar, except that Estrella was used to the life of a Rene. She wasn't very happy. She wanted to be oh, I guess, treated better or have more access to Gord's wealth and something. But anyway, Gord was not happy being stuck with her. And it turned out that the man who had been, she had been this one Renee's until Gord defeated him in a fight. And he didn't even want to do the fight. But the man was actually fairly happy to get rid of Estrella. Now, Ull, I believe, is north of La Pala and through a set of hills between mountains. This is being talked about as if it is east of Tuzmet. They refer to this nomad as a Tuzmiti. And so I'd have to look at the map, but it seems like they're referring to Tuzmet as just west of Ket. All right.
It says they forded the river. If they were in La Pala to ford the river, they would have to go south, right?
Yes, it mentions that that his people are northwest, so they knew he was a Tuzmiti nomad as he was dressed. So he wanted to go in the opposite direction to full pursuit. So he went southeast and from there forded the river. And then they turned directly south and are entering the hills. And that's where it's supposed to be wild with bandits and such. And then Gord does want to, you know, head southwest. He doesn't want to turn toward the north. So that's why... the Pearl was asking him if he didn't want to come and stay with the nomad's family. All right. I am going to restart. It's page 54, second paragraph. All right. The Al-Babur tribe welcomed the three of them joyfully when they rode up to the camp late the next afternoon. Gord was surprised and mildly impressed to find that Zulman was the first son of the tribe's hetman, the fact that Zulman, to his credit, had not seen fit to reveal. The young man's return with four splendid horses and the gorgeous girl who was to be his wife was more than sufficient cause for the whole group to celebrate wildly. Gord was accepted as a member of their people by the hetman, named Mullah, after Zulman described the fight in the Dar Peshtwar and the young adventurer's victory over so many swordsmen. Like all the Kirkers, this tribe was not truly nomadic. The Al-Babur built stone villages and their women tended crops. Periodically, the tribe would move from one village site to another, each place matching one of the four seasons. The men of the tribe hunted and fought. Occasionally there would be disagreements or even feuds between the tribes, but usually the Al-Babur and the other Kirker tribesmen made war upon the wandering Bayomans and the roving Yolites. Their celebration on this evening of Zulman's return was a dual one, for it was also time to move the village they occupied in high summer to the fortress in which the tribe dwelled during the coming autumn months. Just as promised, the latter part of his journey with Zulman had taken Gord back in the direction he wished to go. And with the move of the Alberb tribe, if he remained with the group, he would be taken farther along his intended path, ending up in the hills between the southern grasslands claimed by the Yolites and the broad steppes where the Bayomian tribesmen roamed in bands, with their herds and grazing animals. All right, so Yolites are all, you know, they're the people from all. The Bayomen are the Paynim, you know, the Paynim tribesmen. Surprisingly, they're pretty far north at this point. And I thought Gord had said he wanted to be going southwest, so. And yes, if he's going for the Ashen Desert, it certainly is more likely route to travel south unless he's due to meet somebody. Now, if you remember, Grast and Zuckmoy have these two. They have Obni and Ecclabdra, who are rivaling each other in a contest to find the first artifact. Gord may be headed to where Ecclabdra is supposed to start in Yol, and that may be why he wants to go up in that direction. Now, the... I'm wrong. That is, Yol is south of Ket. All right. So they did travel pretty far south. He does, but he definitely wants to end up going through the barren plains to reach the Ashen Desert at some point. But maybe right now he needs to go up to Yol first. Okay. So again, we're getting a bit of a travelogue here, which is always very enjoyable, and it's full of different little things we're seeing here. Some description of the area south of Ket, heading toward Yol. I am wrong. He is heading south, because Yol is south of Ket. I don't know why I keep messing that up. All right.
I think maybe it was the ruse that he tried to pull off with the Tosmani apparel.
Yeah, that was why they were headed south. But then I thought that this Tosmani Zulman was going to be heading north, but they've actually encountered his people. Are south of Ket, not actually more than a couple days south, I think. So it is one of their dwelling places. They've got four different ones per season, and right now they are actually dwelling south of Ket. Can you show where Tuzmit is? Because they keep referring to these as Tuzmiti tribes.
It's right north of Ket.
All right. So then they have at least one seasonal home south of Ket. All right. There's Tuzmit. There's Ket. So they have one place that is definitely... they have this place south of the river because they've headed out of Ket from La Pala, where that four is, and then down into the hills, and here where that P is, they seem to have encountered a permanent dwelling, one of the four seasonal permanent dwelling of these Kirkers. And so those Kirkers, they are the Tuzmiti nomads or semi-nomadic people. And so we've got to think, I think I had a different eye view of Tuzmit. So definitely Tuzmit. Now, you're not going to see it, but Ekber is actually a port city. And it one of the reasons it survived the Invoked Devastation was that as a port city, they were far from the center of the attack. And also, they received... some of the other ships from other areas came to Ekber, and then I don't know if they were a major port, but they're one of the states that actually did not suffer the devastation, from the Invoked Devastation. Most of the states that were very far north were not caught up in it. And it's really the Paynim and the Barren Plains and Zeif that got the worst, I believe, of the Invoked Devastation. All right. I am on page, I believe, 55 and paragraph 2. "Stay with us this season, Gord of Greyhawk," the Pearl pleaded when the three of them found themselves alone inside Zulman's tent during a lull in the revelry. I'm bored here, and it will be nice to have someone who knows more of civilized life to converse with. A scowl crossed Zulman's countenance momentarily when he heard that statement. He did not allow it to remain, and he even managed a slight smile to go with his next words. As my bride wishes, Gord, my brother, let it be. I too ask you to remain with us, a warrior such as yourself. Such as you will be a great honor to the Al-Babur, and you will soon become wealthy and respected. Already my father tells me there are two men who wish to have their daughters married to you. Gord had to laugh at that last remark. I am honored, he said quickly, so as to show no offense to his host. But imagine a man such as I trying to settle down, and with two women, not just one. I would be crazed or fleeing within a month. I am much honored, Zulman, my brother, but my feet can never be still, and I have a duty to consider also. On the morrow I must bid you farewell. You are too young for such wandering, the pearl said petulantly. Zulman started to retort angrily on Gord's behalf, but Gord managed to interject his own reply. Not so, dear sister. I look but a youngster of 20 summers, but I am older. The years have been kind to me. Ah, at 16 warriors of the Al-Babur tribe ride alone to steal horses from our enemies, tall hillman told his wife a bit to be. You shame Gord by suggesting he is not equal to his manhood. Offering vague excuses, Gord managed to slip away from the two and go outside. He was greeted heartily by several warriors, and soon they were all drinking wine and talking of horses. The gathering lasted well into the night, with Zulman's father repeatedly singing the praises of the young Easterner, who had so much to do with his son's safe return. When Gord departed the next morning, he was mounted on a small swift stallion named Wind Eater, given to him by the leader of the Al-Babur as a gift of thanks. The animal was far stronger than it looked, Mulla said, assuring Gord that it could run for hours without tiring. The young adventurer sat in a silver-studded saddle, and behind him were silver-embellished saddlebags filled with his old clothing and ample provisions. Gord now wore the garments of the Kirkur people over his male shirt. Before he left, Gord got himself alone for a moment with Zulman and the Pearl, intending to say a quick goodbye. The girl spoke first. I am sorry, Gord of Greyhawk, that I involved you in the unpleasantness at Dar Peshtwar, she said. You understand, I know, that I do not wish to end my days as a harem slave. She was back in form, sounding seductive even when making an apology. It was my privilege to be of service, Lady Gord said. Anxious to end the conversation and be on his way, but the girl insisted on explaining further. Omar, the pile of pig fat, planned to use me as an instrument to further his influence at the court of the Marcher Lord, Pearl told him. I tried everything to escape his toils, and Zulman spoke on my behalf, but to no avail. When I salamied before Zulman in the traditional offering of my body, I was taking an enormous chance. I expected that Zulman would be able to contend with Fat Omar, as he did indeed, but I knew that both of us would need help to overcome or escape all of the force that Omar and the Shah Kuftir would use. I had a good idea that you, Gord of Greyhawk, would somehow interfere, but I could never have guessed how formidable you actually were. She speaks the truth, Zulman interjected. Each time I sought to come near the Pearl, Omar prevented it. Neither would he listen to any of my offers to purchase her. I am sure he was scheming with agents of Ket to place her within the Seraglio, Jakif as a subhai. Promises of freedom would have been made, of course, if she had provided all the information the Kedite agents demanded. Perhaps their promises might have been kept eventually. Although poison after her usefulness had ended would have been more likely. "Why did you think I might help?" Gord asked, finding himself drawn into the conversation, despite his sense of urgency about leaving. "Something in your eyes," the pearl said. "You had no expression on your face, Gord, but your eyes were like a window to your heart. Those gray eyes looked at my dance, but they saw some other one performing. I could tell you were too much of a man not to hate the likes of Omar and the Shah Kuftir, but I could only hope that you would somehow help us to escape from the Dar Peshtwar by using those straight blades of yours." "I could have died," Gord said, a bit of irritation creeping into his voice as he realized that he'd been taken advantage of. "As I could have, and the pearl too," Zalman said. "But why look as if you have just learned that your best stallion has become sterile?" The tall nomad added, his dark eyes crinkled with mirth. "You helped and added much glory to yourself in doing so. Now we are happy, and you are an honored blood brother of the Al-Babar tribe. I will not beg you to stay with us, Gord, but I pledge you my brotherhood and the welcome of the Kirker always." Forsaking offers of horses, flocks of goat, and many wives, the young man rode west without looking back into the steep hills behind. There were many leagues to go, and much to consider before he entered Yolakand. 100 leagues, in fact, more than 300 miles of travel across the open rolling plains that stretched westward from the Penors, farther than anyone knew. Just why he was bound for the great city of the Yolites, Gord still wasn't certain, but go there he would. All right, break. So I'm ending on page 58. We have a little more, I think, of this chapter, but we're just about out of time. So, you know, they call that magic has left the wand here. That is a cool one. All right, so we've got a picture of the Caliphate of Ekber, Tuzmit, the Sultanate of Zaif, and Ket. So, you know, we've got a good idea there of these various locations. And I hadn't really thought of Tuzmit as the home to these semi-nomads. And yes, Penners equal Bennett equal Banner, and that's, you know, about the hills. In the traditional Greyhawk, they are the Banner Mountains, so Gygax referred them as the Penners. Now, you know, I thought this was a very decent little bit of the story right here, and using things from Gord's past. But, you know, I really appreciate learning more, especially about Tuzmit. I mean, that really fills in some very interesting things there. Now, there's the Tuzmit Hills. So Tuzmit is actually kind of spreading in this story, with them having one of their seasonal dwellings south of La Pala. It kind of curves upward around that river there. So the Sultanate of Zaif may not be right up to the river border right there. It may be some a line that goes far west of that border, and in that area might really be Tuzmit. I've always kind of assumed that the Tiflic River was the borderline of Tuzmit. But obviously, it is not. All right, it's 6:59. So I think I'm gonna finish up for the night, and then tomorrow start off finishing this chapter. And I thoroughly enjoyed this little part of the story. it was more complex than I thought that it was going to be. All right, I'm going to say goodnight to everybody, and I'm going to bring in Craig and kick him out.